Hour number two, Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Last chance to sign up and play the official four-team game bracket challenge brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports and the bluffs at Rocky Ridge. Enjoy the biggest and best views in the Nashville area from your dream home site. Call now, 866-GET-LAND. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracketchallenge or the Game Nashville app now and pick your teams for a chance to win tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium on April 15th. Luke Combs, one of the best in the business. I got to listen to his new album. Big Luke Combs fans, but unfortunately I'm ineligible for that contest. So that's quite tragic. But,
well, you know, you do have a, you know, connection to the promotions office. You can always
ask a favor. He also is a co-host of mine. Welcome back in, Michelle and Junie. Michelle Knesbeck, Junie Riddle, Nick Frazier with us this morning live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Also, Preds Road Watch Party. Join 102.5 The Game and the Preds Energy Team at the Rusty Nail in Hermitage on Monday, April 3rd. That's this Monday for the Preds Road Watch Party as your Nashville Predators take on the Dallas Stars. Going to be a big one. Enjoy the $3 two-lane beer drafts, a great local atmosphere with a large outdoor patio and volleyball courts. Plus, try some of their great food, especially the chicken wings. That's 102.5 The Game and Preds Energy Team at the Rusty Nail on Monday, April 3rd. See you there. Junie, as soon as I got in this morning, you told me you had created a list of the top 10 prospects in this year's draft that you believe could be good fits for this Tennessee Titans team, whether it be a good fit for their offense, defense, just 10 players that you think would translate really, really well into this Tennessee Titans organization, not based off of, you know, based off of some of the positions that they are in need of. So whether it be wide receiver, tight end, who is your number one guy that's number one on this list, June?
Oh, you want to start with number one?
Okay, I guess we could start with 10 and we could do like a build up.
Okay, let's start.
We'll start 10.
I'm that kind of, I wanted to ease into this.
We need edge of their chairs.
I want everybody to be like, who is Junie's number one?
Who is number one?
So number 10, I'm going to start with, I would be floored if the Titans got this guy. And okay. I think, honestly, even though he is number 10, I think out of all of them, I wouldn't say most excited, but he's in my top three. I'd be most excited. It is Darnell Washington, the tight end, 6'7", 270 pounds out of the University of Georgia.
Can you say that again? How tall is he, Junie?
6'7".
6'7".
I mean, he could play power forward for Georgia, and probably nobody would bat an eye, okay? This guy is a monster. I was watching the tight ends do the sled drill, right? And all the guys, I would have thought it was like a really light sled when you watched Darnell Washington because the way he just manhandled this thing. But then I watched all the other tight ends go to the sled, and it looked like it was night and day. It looked like he was the high school player competing against middle schoolers. Like the gap was that much. This guy, number one, is a blocking tight end. They basically called him the sixth man on the offensive line at Georgia. But flat out, he can also catch the ball as well. And I don't think that Titans fans would get mad if they drew up a tight end screen for this guy.
I'm just saying.
I think that would be a good blocking replacement for Jeff Swaim. I guarantee you he will be a better blocker than Jeff Swaim. But going in to number nine, a player that played in this state in college, and it might not be who you think.
Dun, 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 dun.
It is another Darnell. Darnell Wright, the right tackle out of Tennessee. Listen, I'm all about building the trenches, and I think this is the best likely right tackle prospect.
A little double D, Darnell Wright and Darnell Washington. He's your sixth man on the tight end. I like that.
Darn it, we're just talking about Darnells here on the show, Michelle Knesbeck and I. But no, Darnell Wright, I mean, he showed a lot. I mean, he took on some of the best edge rushers in the game. We saw what he did with Will Anderson in that Alabama game. The Titans need trenches. You know, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer played left tackle. You know, he could also move into guard. I just think that this is a really high-end right tackle. He found his groove when he moved over to that side. He wasn't a very good left tackle when he played at Tennessee in the years prior. But moving over to the right side, I mean, this guy is ultra-talented. I could see him fitting in well at that position. Number seven, we're going to go on to the defensive side. The Titans, 32nd in pass defense this past year. Mm-hmm. And I have the number 7 prospect as Joey Porter Jr., cornerback out of Penn State, the son of Joey Porter, who was a former Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers as an edge rusher. Mm. So very familiar with Joey Porter Jr.
I wonder why.
He is 6'2". He's very lanky. He's kind of got like a Richard Sherman build, but I feel like he's a little bit faster than what Richard Sherman is, more of a man-on-man cornerback. And I think that anytime you get a guy that's 6'2 and can play the ball, I think that'd be a really good addition for this defense, and this defense needs corners. So coming in at number 6, I got Nolan Smith, the edge rusher out of Georgia. This guy is flying up people's draft boards. When you looked at mock drafts earlier in the year, he was more of a second-round pick.
Yeah.
But after they saw that 4.39 40, I mean, this guy has been moving up. He is an athletic freak.
Joe Rexroad is really, really high on him as well. And, Junie, he's another guy that on some draft boards has dropped and is still not broken that first round, just because we see so much during this time. But he's a guy I agree to. If he drops and does fall into that second round, I mean, he's a steal.
I will say this. Something that's really underrated about this guy, when he was up doing his press conferences with the media, the way he talked about his teammates and the way he defended his teammates, and I was just sitting there thinking, I'm like, this is a guy that you want in your locker room.
Yeah.
This is a team first. He's going to stand up for his guys, going to be hanging out with the guys outside of the locker room, team first. I got all those vibes that whoever gets this guy is going to get an edge rusher who's probably not the most reformed, but has the upside and the personality that you want in your locker room. So an edge rusher position is not necessarily a high priority need, but I think would be a really good fit with this team. So now let's get into the top 5. Top 5, I'm going with, oh, I actually missed one. I missed number 8. And that was Quentin Johnson, wide receiver from TCU.
And we've already discussed him.
Wide receiver is a need for this team. I think he's a true numbers wide receiver 1. But this goes into number 5. My true wide receiver 1 of this entire draft is Jordan Addison. Jordan Addison is dropping in this draft because he didn't have the best 40 time. And I know a lot of people look at that and say, well, Junie, Mike Vrabel wants speed. This guy is on the smaller end. He didn't have the best 40 time. Why would the Titans consider drafting this guy? Because what he is best at is separation. And when you look at games and look at some of the wide receivers that the Titans had on here on the team last year, that was the number one problem. Not only can he separate, but he has great hands. He has a versatile route tree. He's probably the best route runner in this entire draft. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, you know, if the Titans were to go and get a Quentin Johnson, you kind of have a big physical-bodied receiver with another physical-bodied receiver in Treylon Burks. I think having a smaller, quicker, shiftier wide receiver to go along with Treylon Burks, mm-hmm. like a Jordan Addison, and make Addison your number one, because I feel like he has true number one wide receiver traits, that is a good 1-2 punch in the wide receiving core.
And quickly, if you're not as familiar with Jordan Addison, so he was the 2021 Biletnikoff Award winner when he was paired with Kenny Pickett at Pitt, and then transferred to USC. And I think how you described him, Junie, is perfectly. He's really good at just getting off the line of scrimmage and beating, you know, his one-on-one matchup. He's quick. He's got, you know, the ability to switch directions. You talk about that route running and how he can kind of light people up there. You know, when you talk about the one-on-one battle between a wide receiver and a cornerback and beating them and being able to switch directions so quickly, that is one of his strengths. And I mean, it's so important, especially with cornerback play, you know, meaning more. I mean, look at this Tennessee Titans team. Look at how much, you know, not having elite corners affected their pass defense. And having wide receivers just light them up day in and day out. I really, really like a guy like Jordan Addison, especially because he has dropped, but is still a high, high prospect.
100%. So number 4, this might come as a shocker to you.
Okay.
But it is cornerback Devin Witherspoon out of Illinois.
Okay.
This guy is an absolute freak. He's built strong. He's right around 6 foot, so he's not on the taller end, but he is a very physical corner. He can play slot. He can play outside. He can play man-to-man. And when it comes to corners in this league stepping up and making big tackles, that's a problem nowadays because of how pass-oriented this league has become. You don't see a lot of physical corners stepping up and making big tackles. And if you know anything about DBs, DBs don't like to make tackles. This guy will step up to the plate and make tackles. I think he is a Tennessee Titans-esque. I think he's a cornerback that somebody that Mike Vrabel looks for. He can play in. He can play the ball. He can play man-to-man, and he can step up and make physical tackles as well. I really like him. And on top of that, he is really good at shedding blockers also.
So, instinctive. 14 pass breakups in 2020 this past year.
Yeah, so I think that personally, I think he's the best corner in the game, and I think he's being overlooked by, like, Christian Gonzalez out of Oregon, who ran a really good 40. Mm-hmm. You know, Joey Porter Jr., his dad played in the NFL. He's got a lot of upside and played at Penn State. A guy like Devin Witherspoon at Illinois is somebody who is really underrated to me, and I really, really like him.
And if you want to know Junie's top three, we're not telling you in this segment. In 2 minutes on the other side of the break, we will let you know Junie's top three players he thinks the Tennessee Titans should go after in this year's draft class. You're listening to Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3, and the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Happy Saturday, Nashville. Come hang out. We are asking everyone to call, text in. What is your best April Fool's joke? We've been reading them throughout the show. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We love to hear everybody's best April Fool's joke. So we've gotten some texts. We've gotten some calls. Text us, call us, tell us yours. But right now, sticking with the Tennessee Titans, Junie has compiled a list of 10 guys, 10 NFL prospects that if the Tennessee Titans drafted, he would be very excited about. Junie, we are going to do your top three right now, but we do have a texter on the text line, Ben, and I think we'll be able to answer this question after you do your top three. But Ben says, if the Titans somehow ended up drafting two out of your top five, who would they be and how? So let's do your top three, and then we'll answer Ben's question.
Okay, that sounds good. So coming in at number three.
Dun, 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 dun.
Trigger warning ready. Quarterback out of Kentucky,
woo!
Will Levis.
You've been very, very high on him.
I have been high on him. I've said it for months. And now it's kind of becoming more of a popular thing to say because I feel like Bryce Young had always been QB1 in this class for, you know, majority of the national media. I know Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper has him at 1-2. He just has Will Levis at 2. But I have been on C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, 1 and 2 for months now.
You have?
And
as a Louisville fan, people, so listen, I am not giving him any of my Kentuckiness.
She isn't swaying me whatsoever, believe me. But I just, like I said, I think his arm, his mobility, his quick release, and I think a lot of his flaws can be coached out of. He's still an accurate passer. But, you know, you said he was dealing with turf toe last year.
Yeah, turf toe.
I have had turf toe before. It is not fun. It is the ligaments that connect your foot into your big toe, and it constantly feels like a rubber band that you're stretching and pulling every time. It is so, you can play with it, but it is so incredibly uncomfortable that it really does alter, and especially for a quarterback with footwork. You're missing your O-line. You're in a new system. You lost your number one receiver, Wandale Robinson, to the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of turnover with this team.
And three offensive linemen to the NFL draft.
Bottom line is Will Levis had the best year as a Kentucky quarterback in 20 years in 2021 when he had talent around him. You're playing in the SEC. You're going up against the best of the best every single week. And when you have a bad O-line, bad OC, you're banged up. You don't have an NFL caliber receiver to go up against some of these NFL caliber receivers for other schools like a Tennessee, like an Alabama, like an LSU. Kentucky doesn't get those guys.
Mm-mm.
And so, yeah, I just think that his turnover proneness can be coached out of. And I think his upside is worth going up and getting. And if he were to fall to 11, I don't see why the Titans should at least consider doing it.
I think, too, when talking about him, I mean, his biggest pro is he's probably got he has the strongest arm, I'd say, in this draft class as far
yes.
as quarterback. Strongest arm,
It's stronger
time.
Than Richardson, and he's way more accurate than Anthony Richardson.
And then, you know, the biggest flaw, weakness, would be some of the decisions and the decision making that he made, the turnovers this past year. So if you want just 1A and 1B of the best thing about him and the worst thing about him, and however you view that, you know, when drafting a quarterback, you know, you said some of those things can be coached out of you. And having a team like the Tennessee Titans or a team like the Seattle Seahawks or the Minnesota Vikings, I think would do him a great deal of success, because I believe he's one of those quarterbacks who has the talent. But if he has the opportunity to go somewhere where he can sit a year, unlike, you know, I think him dropping is actually not the worst thing for him, because I look at the teams picking in the top, like the Panthers and, you know, the Houston Texans, like these teams. I know the Panthers ended up trading up and they do have some pieces.
Yeah.
But if Will Levis went to the Houston Texans, that would be bad for him.
That would be horrible for him. I think that'd be the worst fit. But I'll tell you this. If he goes to the Raiders with Hunter Renfro and Devontae Adams, and they already got Jimmy G, so, you know, offensive-minded head coach, I like that fit a lot. And I think the number seven overall pick could be Will Levis to the Raiders. But, you know, obviously if he does slip through the cracks of the top 10, you know, the Titans will be considering taking him.
So that was three.
So let's go to number two. And number two and number one are not going to be any shockers. Okay. It's Paris Johnson Jr. at Ohio State. This team needs offensive linemen. I believe in building the trenches, especially when you don't have your quarterback. I mean, look at the Philadelphia Eagles, right? They built their trenches on their offense and defensive line, and they basically rode through that all the way to the Super Bowl, and they were right there at the very end of the game. The Titans need to do the same. You have a really good defensive line. You're building up your offensive line. Spent a lot of your free agency going up and filling some of those holes. I think a Paris Johnson Jr., very athletic, very big, long arms. He is your stereotypical prototype for left tackle. And maybe I'm getting a little bit overhyped by his drop step at his pro day and how quick and shifty he did look as a big athlete. But hey, I mean, everybody falls in love with a guy with the metrics they see from the combine and pro days. I really am falling in love with Paris Johnson Jr. And I think that if all the quarterbacks are gone, that he should be in play. So this leads me for my number one.
Oh, Nick Frazier.
Excellent Frazier. And it is Peter Skoronski.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, flat out. This dude is the most surefire offensive lineman in this draft. He can play all five positions. You know, he's not necessarily built to be a left tackle in this league, but if you needed him to play right, if you needed him to play guard, and honestly, if you bumped him into center, I feel like he could play that as well. More of a guard and a right tackle, but he's a guy that could step in at left if you need be, even though his traits, he has shorter arms. He's not as tall and lengthy, but he can play that position and be serviceable. And when you look at the Tennessee Titans, you're really unsure about your entire offensive line. Mm-hmm. Even with the acquisitions that you've gotten, you get a guy like Peter Skoronski, he's going to be a Tennessee Titan for the next 10 years, regardless of where he plays on the line.
Yeah, Junie. I mean, I think he is the most sure offensive lineman, and I think how the quarterbacks go in this draft, just because they are quarterbacks, will determine where he goes. But I mean, when you talk about a guy like him from Northwestern, I agree with just everything you said there. He's a guy who can be serviceable at a bunch of different positions on the line. I mean, you even mentioned center there. If you believe that he could be your center or your guard for the next 10 years. We talk about how hard it is to build depth at the offensive line. I mean, you look at some of the free agents, you look at some of the guys that are available around the league, and it's slim, because not a lot of teams want to give up their swing tackle or their depth at certain positions, because playing on the offensive line it puts such a toll on your body, and having depth at your offensive line, quality depth at your offensive line, is so incredibly important. And, you know, I am with you on those top two guys. We talk about some of the moves they've made in free agency, signing a guy like Andre Dillard, Brunskill from the 49ers, and you have, you know, Brewer, who I assume will play center because he got the second round tender.
Brought back Corey Levin.
Brought back Corey Levin. he'll be depth at that position as well. Nicholas Petit-Frere, what can he do in his second year at right tackle? And, you know, Rand Carthen and Mike Vrabel pretty much confirmed that Andre Dillard would be the left tackle. And if you could get a guy like Peter Skoronski to be in there with them, you're looking at a line right now that's not very old.
Yeah.
And that could mesh and grow together. If you believe Nicholas Petit-Frere can take the next step, if you believe Andre Dillard can take the next step, Peter Skoronski, I mean, that is a very solid offensive line that you could be building not only for next year, but
for
in the
years
to come.
And that's the key to this, is finding the right group of guys that mesh. I mean, listen, do I think Dillard and Brunskill can be long-term solutions? That I don't know.
Maybe.
But maybe. You know, I saw it personally. You know, that teams, when they're going young on the offensive line, sometimes it really does take a while to gel, and it can be ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But when it does, the production that you see on offense is night and day. And it truly is. You can look at it position by position, but really it's the unit. And the unit has to be cohesive. They have to know each other. They have to like each other. And they have to know what the other person is thinking without communicating. When you see different fronts and different stunts and different, you know, switching where the D lineman goes to the outside and the edge rusher goes to the inside, like this stuff happens. And it creates open lanes for pass rushers to find in when you confuse the offensive line. If you can get a young core on the cheap and develop them and have them grow together and say these guys hit, that's the way you rebuild quickly. It's going to be a tall task. And, you know, fortunately for the Titans, you have a high draft pick to go in and get a high-end guy on the offensive line. And these deals that you went out and got Brunskill and Dillard on aren't a lot of money, aren't a lot of guaranteed money, and they're not for a long time. So this gives a really good look at some of these young guys that necessarily haven't gotten their opportunity to see if they can fill in and be a big asset for this team.
Well, and looking at this Tennessee Titans offensive line in 2018 and 2019, you know, left tackle Taylor Lewan, left guard Roger Saffold, center Ben Jones, right guard Nate Davis, right tackle Jack Conklin. It took them a minute to mesh, and, you know, that 2018 to 2019, it took them a minute to mesh. And I remember a lot of people had Keith Carter's head, the offensive line coach at the time. But once they were able to be a cohesive unit, because the offensive line, it relies so much on just everybody being on the same page and knowing what is going on and the communication on the offensive line. And it takes time. You mentioned it. It takes time to mesh together.
Can I just say this real quick? And this is completely off topic. The Tennessee Titans just got me on April Fool's Day. They posted on Twitter the first look at the throwback Oiler uniforms, and it looks like it's a video that hasn't loaded yet. It's just a still image that they're getting a bunch of clicks on that absolutely 100% is not revealing.
Oh, that's
Oiler
great.
Uniforms.
That's
Junie
great.
I got
again. Listen, this is why I don't necessarily have a April Fool's joke story, because somebody gets me every year. It's like I've just blocked them out of my memory so that they don't get brought up again.
Really quick, Junie, we didn't answer Ben's question. If you could draft two of those guys in your top five.
Two of those guys. Okay. If I could draft two of these guys, I would take obviously my number one Skoronski with the first pick. I think that's obvious. And if he was there in the second round or they traded up, Jordan Addison. Those are the two guys I'm going to get. And you know me, I've said this. I know we've been talking about this year's QB draft class, but I have said consistently the Titans need to fill in the holes that they have on this roster and then try and go get their guy next year in that quarterback filled draft class.
And Junie just got on April Fool's Day by the Tennessee Titans on Twitter. What is your best April Fool's joke? What have you been, you know, dubbed by on April Fool's Day? Text us, call us. We've been reading your answers all show long. It's been fun. There's some funny ones out there. Nick Kieser is going to join us next, going to preview the Preds and the Blues tonight. Let's see what Nick Kieser's best April Fool's joke is. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle, Nick Frazier, and Nick Kieser. We are all live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios on this morning. Nashville's best deals of the week is Hot Works in Goodlettsville. Open 24/7 in their infrared virtually led sauna classes. Choose from Hot Cycle, Hot Blast, Hot Thunder, Hot Yoga, Hot Bar. none and more. Right now, join us for just $39 in time for their grand opening today, April 1st. That's $60 off at thegamenashville.com/deals. Get more workout and less time at Hotbox. Nick Kieser, how are we doing this morning? Happy April Fool's Day. Do you have, quickly, before we get into the Nashville Predators and preview their game against the Blues today, we have had the text line. We've had people calling in on their April Fool's jokes. Some of them they're very good. Junie just got dubbed by the Tennessee Titans on Twitter. They said they were going to show the Oilers jerseys, and it's just a video that is constantly loading. Those are always good. Nick, what about you? Have you given a great one, or has somebody, you know, gotten
you? No, I don't have anything personally, but I did tell Frazier that the Preds are probably fool's gold. That's not really a joke, but no, it's been an early morning of quietness for me.
It's coming. Nick Frazier might have something in his bag of tricks.
He already ruined it. I tried. I was like, hey, did you hear about the Preds? He goes, haha, April Fool's. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to try it.
My uncle has ruined that for me for years, Michelle, so you can't really joke with me too often.
Okay.
However, I did see the Titans tweet, Junie. It almost got me too.
And that's the thing is, I almost said, Michelle, we have breaking news. I was like, we have breaking news.
Uniforms.
They are releasing the Oilers uniforms. And by golly, she's been saying it all day long. It's April Fool's Day. What's your favorite April Fool's? And I'm sitting here looking at this like, oh my God, they're going to show the jerseys. And we're all looking forward to it.
Of course.
And I was so eager to see it and say it on the radio. And yeah, they got me. And luckily, I caught myself. And so I saved it. But if you didn't know, Kieser, I'm like
saved by the bell.
I'm like almost I'm basically the most gullible person in the world. So I really have to like hold back before I really jump into things.
Well, Nick, the Nashville Predators are back in action today. They split the road trip. An incredible win in Boston earlier this week over the Bruins. UC Saros so close to getting the shutout. So close to getting a shutout in Boston. Only four teams have beat the Boston Bruins at home this year. Then they go to Pittsburgh. They get shut out by the Pens 2-0. And now back in action against the Blues, sitting 3 points out of a playoff spot in a very tough stretch coming up right now. I know one of the biggest questions is, will Roman Josi play today? Up in Pittsburgh, he was suited up and he did warm up with the team. He didn't end up playing. But how beneficial do you think it could be to have Roman Josi back, especially for the power play, if they get him back today?
Well, we know what he brings to the table, right? Because last year he was snubbed of that Norris Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think right now, you know, I think they've done okay without him. I'm not saying he shouldn't play, but a lot of guys are not playing right now, probably because they need that time to recover. And mm-hmm. I think in his case, and obviously Philip Forsberg's case, you don't want to rush anybody back. However, we're at the time of the year where postseason odds really matter, and this is a huge game today against a Blues team that has, quite frankly, nothing to play for. I mean, this is just another hockey game for them. It's just jobs right now. But the Preds have a 3% chance of making the playoffs.
Ooh.
So when you take a look at that, and Roman Josi's not in the lineup, you're thinking, okay, well, what's he going to be able to do once he comes back? Because the power play has not been quarterbacked very well, and Tomasino was doing his best the other night, but by golly, he could not keep it in, and he could not finish because he's not a finisher. He's just not one of those guys that finishes at the net. But when Josi comes back, if he is back today, that would be huge. What also another thing to be aware of is to see if Jake Livingstone could make his debut. I talked to his coach the day that he signed, and he has a lot of upside. Now, he's probably the best college free agent, but I don't know if he's playing today or not. If he does end up playing, he won't get special teams time, but I think that having another shutdown guy that's in place of Cal Foote would be very nice.
So the Nashville Predators will play the Blues. The game starts at noon, a little matinee hockey we've got going on this morning. And also I just want to mention, too, the Nashville Predators are urging everybody, instead of Preds gear today, to wear red and white in honor of the Covenant School and the tragic incident that happened earlier this week. So keep that in mind when you're getting ready for the Nashville Predators game today, to wear red and white to support the city of Nashville and specifically the Covenant School. So, Nick, we talk about they've got St. Louis today, which is a huge game in itself, just trying to, you know, stack those points, stack those games, because they still are fighting for a playoff spot. Okay, so you have St. Louis, then on Monday, Dallas, then Vegas, then Carolina, then Winnipeg. Winnipeg is the team that you are sitting right behind in the playoff spot. You know, you're you're 3 points behind them. You've got a couple games on hand. How important are these next four games up until you play Winnipeg? You were fortunate that Winnipeg got shut out the same night that you beat Boston to close that gap a little bit. But just in your words, how important are these next three games?
Well, I think it's not the biggest games in franchise history, obviously, so you can put that out the window. But they do have two back-to-back games, Michelle. And whenever you have two back-to-back games, and especially to close out the year after that Watergate case, that's why we're playing on the 14th this year,
yes,
is because of the whole water situation that went down back in November. But honestly, if we don't have these games in hand after this weekend, I mean, you're not going to be in the playoffs more than likely, quite frankly, because this is a team that every period's going to matter. Not even every game, every period. You have to win one at a time. That's probably something that Hines is telling his players is, look, let's win the period. Let's get past 20 minutes. Let's win this period, win the next one, so on and so forth. And they've been doing that relatively well for the last week and a half, I would say. And ultimately, when you play those back-to-backs, and I know that one is going to be up against Vegas,
mm-hmm,
and that's going to be really tough, because when you play a Vegas team that they do have something to play for, they could finish in the first place in the Pacific. So if they finish in the first place and then they get that first wild card team or the second wild card team, I think, I mean, they could have a good first round matchup.
Yeah, they're playing for their positioning in the playoffs. So, you know, when you look at this team, and Junie, I want to ask you this too. When you look at this Preds team, and we talk about, you know, just about a month ago, the Preds waved the white flag. They decided to sell at the trade deadline. But just the magnitude of what this young core has been able to put out there day in and day out, and specifically, you know, UC Soros. I mean, the reason they are in this position is because of the level he has been playing out. And Elliot, I don't know if you guys heard earlier this week, Elliot Friedman was on Caroline Willie and D-Mace, and he just touched on, you know, when we talk about the NFL and we talk about the NHL and postseason play, what is the difference maker? Well, the difference maker in the NFL is, who is your quarterback? Do you have a Patrick Mahomes or do you have a Ryan Tannehill? Because that's the difference maker when you play in the postseason. Well, when you switch it over to hockey, what's the difference maker? It's the goalie. And when you have UC Soros performing the way he has performed, you know, 43 saves in Pittsburgh the other night. He had about, I think it was 35 in Boston, almost a shutout. Earlier this year, 63 in Carolina. But, Junie, what have you just seen from him this past year? And how important is it, you know, leading into postseason play?
Without UC Soros, they lose both the games, Boston and Pittsburgh, by about 3 or 4 goals. I mean, there were so many opportunities that Boston had. There was a shorthanded opportunity, a lot of breaks. You know, guys just getting behind the defense and getting opportunities. And UC just had an absolute day in Boston. And same with Pittsburgh, too. You know, the Pittsburgh game was kind of playing out how it played when they played back in Bridgestone about a month ago, to where it was, you know, nothing throughout most of the game. And, you know, Zucker got the goal in the middle of the second, which, you know, really was all it needed for the Penguins that night. But, you know, you look at the beginning of that matchup as well in the first period, there were about 2 opportunities the Penguins had on a one-on-one with UC Soros that he just flat out stopped it. He had a really nice poke check on one of them to stop the one-on-one. And he's just been playing at such an elite level at the right time. And it just makes me really wonder that if you had a Forsberg, if you had a Yossi, if Duchesne was back, a Juuso Parsonen, and you had this full offensive group back playing with some of the young guys that have been stepping up, would this team be a really dangerous wild card team to get in at the last minute with the way that UC Soros is playing? It's a good question to ponder. But, I mean, just to your point, to your question, he's just been playing out of this world right now.
And they're not just holding out for the postseason, right, Junie? Because if they're hurt, they're hurt. That's what you're hoping, right? You're thinking, okay, well, Yossi's not playing because he's hurt. Forsberg's out because we know he's concussed, basically. I mean, there are a ton of different things that we've just been speculating on lately. And quite frankly, I like what we've seen out of the depth. I remember sitting in the offseason last year thinking, wow, you know what? I think a Jankowski, a Sherwood, a Kevin Gravel, and Jordan Gross, they've been doing very well. I think they've done all that they can to keep this team in it. UC Saros has 40 goals above expected. So, I mean, when you look and see just how he's playing, he's on his game right now. If he's a winning team right now or on a winning team with the Predators, I think he's a first ballot Vezina guy.
Really?
100%.
He was last year. So that is to note when they were in the playoffs that he was in that top three. But the last question I want to pose to you, Nick, and I think this one's really important with this team going forward, with all the young guys that have stepped up to the plate and the guys that have been kind of injured and out of the mix, when you look at the top six forward-wise for next season, who do you think are going to be in that top six?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think I like the top six that we've seen with Cody Glass. I think he's definitely a top six forward, if you ask me. Now, you would obviously bring him in. You would have Forsberg. You would probably have Ryan Johansson back next year. I mean, obviously, if he's healthy, I'm sure he will be. And then you have Philip Forsberg. And then ultimately, you just have to take a look and see, do one of my rookies come back in and play in the top six? And not like rookie, but I'm talking like a Tomasino. You know, I think he's someone that's ready for the top six. I mean, if he had played all year and stayed at the pace that he's currently on, he would have had at least 50 points this year. And I think that's a top six guy. So, I mean, just naming those guys right now, those guys have safe jobs, I would say, in the top six.
So you would put Glass and Johansson as the top two centers over a Juuso Parson and Tommy Novak?
I would say one of those guys, along with a Matt Duchene, is going to have to play wing. They're going to have to figure out who plays center. And it's going to be like when Granlund was here, they had to figure out, okay, who's going to play center? Who has more success at center right now? And obviously, I saw with Granlund, he only had two games at center after he got traded.
Yeah.
So the Preds are going to be very flexible, I think, next season, as they should be. And if Parsonen does better on the faceoffs, by all means, he's all good. I think he could play center.
Well, and, you know, we had David Poile on a couple weeks ago, and I asked him specifically about Cody Glass and that center position. And, you know, when speaking about him, he says he's liked what he's seen from him, but he specifically brought up Juuso Parson, and he said, you know, what he was doing up until he got injured was significant for this team. The Preds are going to have a lot of options next year and a lot of different ways they can create these lineups. Who works the best with who? They'll be taking on the St. Louis Blues at noon today. Got the Preds pregame starting with Max Herz at 11 this morning. But I think all in all, it's UC Saros who has been the difference maker for this team, especially when trying to earn a playoff spot. He's 26-15-6 in his last 47 games and at least 30 saves in 26 of those games. And what do you want when you're in the postseason? You want your in the NFL, you want your quarterback to be playing his best football. In hockey, you want your goalie to be playing his best hockey. And in basketball, you need your guards to be playing their best basketball. Speaking of basketball, we got the men's Final Four matchup coming up tonight. We will all make our picks. Who do we have winning? We're going to take a look at Superbook. Who do we have covering the spread? I'm 3-0 so far on the women's games and the NBA. Coming up next, I'm Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, welcome in. Happy Saturday, Nashville. Last segment of the day, and then we're handing the baton over to Max Herz, who will have your pregame coverage. Nashville Predators, puck drop is at noon. A little matinee hockey this morning. But, fellas, we have got some Final Four matchups this morning. Last night, Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes made history. They beat South Carolina, and LSU beat Virginia Tech in a close one as well. They had a phenomenal fourth quarter, and Kim Mulkey, yet again, has her team going to the national championship. First time ever for LSU women's basketball. So we're going to pick the women's national championship game first, then we're going to pick the men's Final Four games, and we're also going to pick the Preds and the Blues on the puck line today. So, starting off with the women's game, like I said, LSU and Iowa. Caitlin Clark has had back-to-back 40-point games for Iowa. She is the first women's basketball player ever in NCAA tournament history to do that. She has ice in her veins. She is a walking bucket. Give me Iowa minus the three. She's the national player of the year. She's also going to be a national championship. I feel very confident on that.
I am going to take Iowa as well. I mean, listen, whenever the defense has to guard you as soon as you cross over midcourt, you know it's trouble. I mean, this girl literally can shoot from the logo.
From the logo!
I mean, hitting five-plus threes almost every single game. And on top of that, she's drawing double teams. She has excellent passing ability down to the post, always looking for the open person. She not only is a walking bucket, she's just an overall playmaker. I think she's going to be too much for LSU. Give me Iowa to be the women's national champion.
And Nick, before you give us your pick, a quick stat. Caitlin Clark either assisted or produced over 70% of Iowa's points last night.
I know. I saw that. Chris Vanini, I think, put that out, right?
Yeah. I mean, just absolutely incredible.
I mean, on the money line, you've got Iowa minus 150, and then they're also favored by 3 points. I think that's a gimme just watching them play last night. I mean, she's insane. I mean, she just laces it like Steph Curry. I mean, she really did. I mean, it was insane. But what's more impressive to me, just to highlight her for half a second here, is she finds her teammates so well, mm-hmm. too. I give her credit where it's due. She finds her teammates in the paint, around just the whole entire key. She does a good job of making room on the entire court. It's awesome.
She is the offense. Like, it's either the defense double teams her, and she finds the open player to shoot the three. She's excellent on the pick and roll and passing to the post player. And if they come out on her too deep, she drives the bucket. Like, there's no way to stop this girl. And if you sag off of her and try to give her space, she's lighting you up from downtown. I mean, she's the best women's basketball player I have ever watched play, genuinely.
So we've got a clean sweep of Iowa. Nick Fraser, what are you going with this game? You going Iowa or LSU? Iowa favored by 3.
You know, I would love to just take Iowa here because that's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm just not going to be crazy and overthink it. I would love to take an alternate spread at like 6.5. I'm pretty sure it's probably like plus money, mm-hmm. probably like plus 140, something like that. I love the plus money value, but 3.5 is a gimme.
We're looking at the lines on Superbook Sports. Our betting segment is presented by Superbook Sports. But just one more thing about Caitlin Clark, because I just can't stop raving about this girl. I mean, she is one of the most entertaining college basketball players I think I've watched in a very, very long time. I mean, Diana Taurasi is up there as well. You know, Anthony Davis, some of the greats in men's and women's college basketball, and National Player of the Year. She deserves it, but just an absolute game changer out there and has done a lot for women's basketball as well. Switching to the men's side, we got the first game tonight, Florida Atlantic, with my two Conference USA guys, little Western Kentucky represent over here. Florida Atlantic and San Diego State. San Diego State is a 2.5-point favorite, and Florida Atlantic is plus 125 on the money line. I like San Diego State minus the 2.5. I think Florida Atlantic's story has been absolutely incredible, but San Diego State is huge. They have grown men out there, big bodies, a defensive game, and I'm also going to take the under on 131.5. I think this is going to be a very low-scoring game. Nick?
FAU, baby. Come on. Conference USA. You got to go with them. They've been riding it. And I know that their head coach, he's going to be signing a contract extension after this is all said and done.
Contract extension, or he might be getting a big-time job.
He should be. But he's going to stay down there. They've built a special program. Junie, I hope you agree with me, but if you don't, I understand.
Junie, you going with the Owls?
I am going with FAU as well. I think the matchup to watch for is Darian Tramwell, the point guard of SDU, going up against John L. Davis. Both of these guys I would classify as bulldogs. Built strong, play hard, can shoot from the perimeter, but give me the Owls. I think that they win it.
Nick?
I'm with the two gentlemen over here. I'm with FAU.
Okay.
I have some pretty juicy plays here. The exact win margin, FAU to win by 3, is plus 2,000.
Wow. Ooh, that is good.
I like that.
The next thing I like is FAU to win by 1 to 10 points. That is plus 220. And then also take a money line is plus 120.
So okay, guys, we got
about plus money.
We got rapid fire here. Miami and UConn, the other matchup, about a 7:45 tip. UConn a 5.5-point favorite. I have been on the Miami train, Miami plus 5.5. They've been tested this tournament. UConn hasn't. Miami has phenomenal guard play. UConn's got great play in the paint. They've got the size on them. But what wins in March? It's guard play. I'm taking Miami plus the 5.5, also on the money line, plus 200.
Yeah, give me the Canes. I like the guards. After you had brought it up, I did some research on that team a little bit more in depth, and they're insane. I would love to see them have some more success here.
I mean, they have three guards averaging over 10-plus points a game. I think 5.5 is just too many points. I want to be different. I think UConn wins, but I like Miami to cover on this one.
I will be taking Miami, I'll be taking UConn, first half minus 2.5.
Oh.
Okay, first half minus 2.5.
And then lastly, I got the Preds.
Preds.
Preds win today.
Preds on the puck line.
I will be taking Preds here.
4-1.
Okay, clean sleep. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, Max Herz will have pregame coming up now. Have a great Saturday, Nashville. 102.5, 106.3 in the game, Nashville app.